Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, back for our weekly Zeiss is Right chat with Post-Gazette sports columnist Paul Zeiss. Paul, how are you? We got a lot of Steelers, Pirates, Penguins talk to get into today.
I'm doing good today. Hopefully you're doing good too, Adam.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Actually, we chatted earlier. We're having to re-record because of some audio issues. So if you see Paul in one place in the video and in a different place at the end, that's the reason why. We're just going to re-record our Steelers section that we did earlier. And Paul, what I want to get into with you is, were the Steelers aggressive enough in their offseason? They've gotten a lot of credit for what they've done at quarterback with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, trading Deontay Johnson, kind of getting his attitude out of that locker room. The Patrick Queen deal, to some extent, lots of credit for that as well. But there hasn't really been a whole lot of follow-up, and they entered the NFL draft with some real needs. So we're going to talk about that. Before we do, just want to thank our primary sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Paul Zeiss Show here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560. To get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, well, let's get into this aggressiveness conversation. As I look at it, the Steelers have a big need at right tackle. They have a big need at receiver, minus Deontay Johnson. They have a big need at center. They arguably have a big need at cornerback and maybe a couple of other positions. And I think it kind of hamstrings what they are and are not able to do in the NFL draft in terms of taking, you know, drafting for need versus drafting the best available players. Would you have liked to see the Steelers do more in free agency to set themselves up for this NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that they did right now is they put themselves in a position where they have probably too many positions that they've got to figure out how to fill. And it's not realistic to be able to hit on a rookie in every one of these positions. I look specifically at, and we've talked about receiver a lot over the course of time, but to me, the more egregious thing is that they didn't go out and get at least a center or a tackle, because they need an offensive lineman at both of those spots. I think you're going to have a hard time, you know, convincing me that you're going to be able to fill both of those spots in the draft and get two guys that are ready to play. You know, I kind of would say that, you know, if they would have went out and signed a tackle, I'd really have a different feeling about the way that they went about their offseason. But I feel like after they got the home runs of, you know, bringing in Russell Wilson and then going to get Justin Fields, so it's like, oh, wow, they're really being aggressive. They're going to get quarterbacks. They got both of their guys. And then they went and got Patrick Queen, and it was like, oh, my, this is unbelievable. After that, it hasn't been a whole lot of anything. And so I think when you go into the draft and you look, they have a needed tackle, a needed center, a needed receiver, a needed corner. I mean, at some point, you're looking at it, you say, if you've got four glaring needs, it's unrealistic to think that you're going to be able to fill them all in the draft with guys who are capable of playing. So they kind of fell a little bit short of the mark, if you ask me.
Yeah, especially I just wanted to bring up, Paul, something you and I talked a lot about on the podcast during the season was, listen, Joey Porter didn't play immediately, and Broderick Jones did not play immediately. Keanu Benton really was, you know, kind of phased in kind of gradually in terms of what he did on the defensive side. So how unreasonable is it to expect to hit on four picks? Because I look at, you know, a good draft class last season that they had. People are feeling good about all three of those guys I just mentioned, but they didn't go into the season with them in a good place. And I think planning on doing that 2 years in a row is a lot. And you're still probably going to have 5-6 games at the beginning where maybe those guys are not ready or not available.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing there is that you have to really look at the fact that in a typical draft class, how many starters do you get the guys that start in the first year? I mean, I would say probably, what do you think the league average is? I'd be surprised if it's not more than like 1.8 or 1.9, if it's somewhere in that neighborhood, where average number of guys from every draft class league-wide that actually end up starting their first year. If it's more than two, I would be surprised. I would be absolutely surprised if it was more than two. So to me, you're basically, you know, asking to do double what most teams probably do. I just don't think that's realistic at all.
Paul, how do you feel about the fact that they've specifically with the right tackle situation, I think kind of gotten themselves into a pickle of, you know, it's not a deep tackle class. There's some really good prospects at the top that we talk about here frequently. J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims, Thais Fuaga, maybe a couple other guys you can all see being solid fits with this offensive line. But when you get into those later rounds, there's not as many of those guys around. And the fact that it's right tackle that we're talking about and not left. And I think traditionally a lot of NFL teams that – well, not traditionally. In the modern NFL, you don't usually want to spend a ton of money or a ton of draft capital on a right tackle as opposed to a left who's typically protecting – the blind side, have they kind of, and then you throw into the equation Arthur Smith and his offense and the way they may need a right tackle more than other teams might because of the way they want to run the ball, the way they want to be able to run at both sides. Have they just kind of boxed themselves into a corner at that position specifically, maybe more than some of these others we're talking about?
Could it be a situation where they have to trade up again to take a tackle for the second year? I don't know. I hope they don't do that. But at the end of the day, one thing that seems to be changing is the value of these tackles. And it seems like a lot of teams are starting to value right tackle almost as much as left. Not quite, but almost for a variety of reasons. But I think the way that the Steelers want to play offense, they better go get a tackle. they better go get – I mean, again – maybe Dan Moore finally has his reckoning, you know, his day of reckoning, and he becomes the guy that and nobody thinks he can be. I don't know. But I think you're rolling the dice if you go into the season again with Dan Moore as your guy. So you got to go get a tackle, and you got to get somebody who's an upgrade over Dan Moore who's also ready to play. You're not doing that in the second or third or fourth round. You're just not in this draft. So you are in a little bit of a box yourself in a corner. In that, in order to get one of those guys, you're probably going to have to move up from where you're at. I just don't know if that's smart, but I don't know how else you're going to do it if you're going to try and address tackle in the draft.
Paul, I also wanted to ask, do you think that they're maybe more confident in some of these guys that they already have on the roster than maybe we on the outside feel that they should be? I think names like Nate Herbig possibly is a center candidate. Corey Trison, Darius Rush at corner, Dan Moore, who you already mentioned, and you know, every time they bring him up, they tell us they feel pretty good about him, regardless of what the metrics say, regardless of what the eye test says. Do you think there's just a level of, yeah, we can still pick the best player available because we like the guys that we have in the building, and if we don't get that tackle, well, we think we can play with Dan Moore. If we don't get that corner that we're excited about, then we're going to slide Darius Rush and these projectable guys in there. How much of that do you think is part of their calculus compared to what you and I are doing sitting on the outside?
Well, it's been a big part of their MO, hasn't it? I mean, they tend to like some of their players a lot more than maybe they deserve to be liked, and they also tend to like a lot of their players more than most other people like them. So I would tell you that I think that's a big part of it. In some ways, they're probably going to try and run the clock out on some of these guys and just say, well, you know, we're confident in Dan Moore. We're confident he's going to be able to get the job done. And we're confident that he'll be able to play at a level that, is going to give us a chance to be really good on offense. Or, you know, the other guy we talk about is Herbig at center. I mean, these are guys that we talk about all the time as being sort of really good backups, but not starters. And that's the problem. And I think that the Steelers, you know, and look, the Steelers are not unique in this. You know, I could make a case that every team does this where they're self-scouting. They tend to overrate some of the guys that they have, and they tend to be stubborn about it. And that's just how it is. I hope it's not the case, but Adam, it will not shock me if we have a situation of where, what's the guy they got from Carolina? Dante Jackson, is that his name? The corner?
Yeah.
he's the starter at corner, or Dan Moore is the starter at one at that tackle, you know, or Herbig is at center. It won't shock me if one or two of those guys actually are in the starting lineup when we get to training camp in July.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. I don't know where to expect them to maybe do something like that. I feel like center might be the most likely place, which I think would make a lot of people upset considering how many very solid centers there are going to be deep into this draft. I saw an article today that it could go in as deep as the fourth round. You might be able to get a starter. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Paul, I also wanted to throw into this discussion Jason Lockenfor report that the Steelers are still trying to make something happen at wide receiver. Would you feel better about this conversation if they find a way to hold on to their first-round pick? They can go out and get the tackle that we're talking about. They add a proven veteran receiver who's going to be ready day one. Names like Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel that they've been connected to, but that there hasn't been a ton of movement on. And then maybe you get your center later in the draft. If those are the three things that you do between now and when the offseason program starts, are you feeling better than maybe you do now, given the lack of moves they've made since the flurry at the beginning?
Well, if they go get a really good receiver, yeah, that's a big, 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 big plus for them. Because I think that's a hole that they have. They've got Pickens. They need a second guy. So I would tell you, if they have the choice between keeping their first-round pick or trading it for one of those guys you mentioned that's a big-time receiver, there's no question in my mind you got to make the deal. Because I know that there's receivers in this draft. But if you're going to tell me that you're going to take a first-round receiver, why not just use a first-round pick to go get a guy who has already proven that he can win in this league and he can play in this league and be a star in this league? When you have just told the world by signing Russell Wilson that you are in win now mode, you're basically saying your team is good enough. We think we can win now. Well, if you're going to do that, you can go get an NFL player who's proven he can be an NFL player, and don't roll the dice with some kind of guy, with some rookie who may or may not be good enough. I think, to me, you know, if they're able to get if that report is true, and they go out and get a big time receiver for whatever it costs, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, give away the farm, but what if you got a guy like Ayuk, like I don't know. He's a rental, really. He's kind of a straight rental. What if they basically brought their price down and said, we're going to give you, we'll put him up there for a second round pick, you know, because he's a straight rental. And of course they're trying to get rid of his money. I mean, that's the way it looks at it. That's the way it looks for me, at least. Well, okay. If you can get him for a second round, there's not a second rounder you could pick that's going to be a better player than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that would change the complexion. And, you know, if they'd made that deal earlier, Paul, I think we're having, you know, a different conversation today, but they didn't. So maybe this is just a case of Omar Khan slow playing things a little bit, knowing that, you know, maybe he can do what he did with Justin Fields, right? Which was he really drove the price down by being patient and waiting, adding Russell Wilson so that you didn't really have to do it. But then once they felt like Justin Fields could be had for a lower round pick, they went and jumped on that. Maybe Omar Khan's doing the same thing here. We'll have to wait and see. Paul, we're going to get into some Pirates on the other side here. Just want to thank another sponsor, Pitt Johnstown. It's your Pitt quality education with up-close and personal learning, a top-ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News & World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located in 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining. It's a vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Like I said, we'll be right back with some Pirates talk. Paul, lots of David Bednar chatter in the last few days, blowing his third save and four opportunities on Tuesday against the Tigers. Gets some boos from the crowd. Our Jason Mackey was on here on the YouTube channel earlier saying, hey, don't boo David Bednar. A lot of people saying on social media, well, they weren't necessarily booing David Bednar. They were booing Derek Shelton for not getting him out of the game earlier. Meanwhile, Aroldis Chapman's pitching very well. You know, a villain in Pirates history, but now he's gaining a little bit of a cult following here early on. What's your read on the way that this closer situation has been handled and should be handled over the next few weeks and months?
Well, I mean, I think the thing about Bednar is, you know, he's coming off, what is it, a lat injury? He missed a lot of spring training. He hasn't been built up. His arm, you know, he hasn't thrown a lot of pitches. He's not strengthened to where he needs to be strengthened. I think it's absolutely malpractice on the Pirates' part that they tried to just throw him out there and wonder why he's not sharp and why he's not able to, you know, do the things he did last year and the year before. I just think it's a matter of he's got to throw more than he's throwing. And if it were me, you brought in Aroldis Chapman. You paid him $10 million, right? You bring him in, you make him your closer for the next 2 weeks. You let Bednar throw bullpens and sides and all the other crap that they do to try and get pitchers built up. And then when you feel like you really got Bednar back to the point where he's thrown enough pitches, where his arm is strengthened, that he's able to, you know, start now honing in on pitching again, then you maybe put him back in the eighth, you know, the eighth inning setup role for a couple of, you know, appearances. And if it looks like he's got his stuff back, you put him as your closer. I mean, I don't subscribe to the idea that, you know, just because he struggled early that Chapman has to be your closer for the whole year. I actually like Chapman in the eighth inning role in the setup role. And I'll tell you why, because of what we saw the other day, because, you know, that when he went 101 and struck the guy out, then he went 102 on the black. Right. And he just stared them down. I don't care who pitched the ninth inning. That team was beat right then and there. You got an intimidating guy that throws it 101. That is a menacing type of guy out there on the mound. That's a little bit cocky. Well, a lot cocky. That's willing to, you know, that's the kind of guy there. He sets you up for the closer to come in, and the closer's just got to throw some strikes and get out of it. I think I like Chapman in the eighth inning role right now at this point in his career. And I think Bednar's a good closer. I think that you have to give him maybe a week or week, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever, just to get on the side, throw bullpens, do all the things you do to really kind of get up to speed. He just hasn't thrown enough, you know? And so to me, I don't know what the Pirates were thinking, throwing him out there to the Wolves, but that's what they did. And you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, I really like Aroldis Chapman in that, not just an eighth inning role, Paul, but just like you said, bring him in when the game is on the line, high leverage innings. You know, that's the role that I think works best for the Pirates in the long run. I guess it's part of this conversation too, Paul, is how serious are the Pirates about winning games? Because that move to put David Bednar out in that situation, on some level, Paul, seems like something they would do when they knew they weren't going to be very good, right?
Right.
When okay, you want to build this guy back up as soon as possible. We're going to just kind of throw him into the deep end of the pond and hope he swims. If they're serious about making the playoffs, isn't that malpractice, Paul? Because that's how I look at it. It's if you did this last year, the year before, any time since Derek Shelton and Ben Cherington have shown up, that's one thing. But they're telling us they want to win games. They start 8-2, 9-2, whatever, and then they're doing stuff like this. And how many times did we sit here when the Pirates were good last time around, Paul, and say, you know, they were a game or two short of getting out of those wild card situations and getting out of one game situations? These games matter, Paul, and those decisions do matter. They add up over the course of a season.
Absolutely. There's no question. And that's the problem. You cannot afford to lose games like that, you know, like they've lost. You just can't. And you can't give them away in April. You can't give them away in May. You can't give them away in June and July. Because guess what? When you get to August and September, then you have no margin for error. And so to me, I thought when Bednar went out there, I mean, I can get to where Derek Shelton is as a manager. He's got his closer out there. It's a guy he trusts. It's a guy who's been very, very good for a couple of years. I get all that. But it's clear he didn't have it. Probably three batters into that thing. At that point, you got to worry about winning your game. Forget about, well, he's my closer. I'm going to stand by him. I'm going to give him an opportunity. No, he can have an opportunity next time he goes out there. We got to win the game. And so, and I'll give you a great, like, sort of parallel, right? The Penguins are 78 games into their season. It is very likely. I mean, I think they're probably going to make the playoffs. But it's very likely they're going to miss it by a point maybe two if they do miss it, right? Which is one game. You want to go point to the number of games where we talked about different things that Mike Sullivan did that he or didn't do that didn't give him the chance, the best chance to win, you know, and do, how many games he stuck with Tristan Jari that he probably shouldn't have, right?
His overtime decisions.
His overtime record is abysmal. I mean, there's a million things. So basically what I'm trying to tell you is, even though these seasons are really, really long, every game counts and matters when you're a team that's sort of on the fringe of the playoffs. You know, it's one thing if you are, I don't know, pick a team. The Orioles, you know, they're probably going to be a 95, 98, 99 win team. Okay, if they blow a game early, it's not a big deal because they're not on the fringe of the playoffs. But if you're the Pirates and you're trying to win and you're on the fringe, really, you're probably going to be a team that is in that area where you're going to be scratching to try and get to the playoffs. Man, every single game matters. After two or three batters, you got to get David Bednar out of the game.
Yeah, and to me, Paul, I guess it's less about the decision and more about the mentality behind it. And it does not seem like a serious decision to make in that situation. It just seems like the status quo from the last several years, which we all know has not been good enough. So something to monitor moving forward is if they start, you know, looking at this more as we got to win these games. We're off to a good start. We have a chance here. We're going to be real serious and not just worry about people's feelings and, you know, trying to accomplish these, I think, lesser goals than winning games over the course of a year. What level of investment do you think the Pirates should have in Jack Sawinski as a piece of this outfield? Struggling a little bit here to start. Does he need to be a piece of this Pirates outfield moving forward to be as successful? Or was he always an iffy kind of prospect with some pop who's not going to stand out as much as the depth of the organization improves around him and they have more options of guys to go to, you know, like an Oliveras who they brought in the offseason? Do you think that they need to get Jack Sawinski straightened out, or do you think he should be viewed more as playing for his job because there are a lot of guys who would like to take it?
I think Jack Sawinski and Jared Triola are two guys that are very similar for me. They're two guys where you say, we hope that we find guys to beat you out. We hope that we find guys that are just a little better than you, because we think, for instance, in Triola's case, we think you're a really good fifth infielder and somebody who might be able to play all four positions on the infield, right? You're not quite good enough to be an everyday guy. We hope that somebody like, say, oh, I don't know, Nick Gonzalez comes out of nowhere and does what he does. So you have that. And then the other thing is, when you look at it, Sawinski is the same way. I said this a couple years ago. If Sawinski is your fourth or even like fifth outfielder, right, or your fourth outfield position, fourth outfield guy who's your, you know, maybe against righties on your Sunday lineup and things and such, then you're pretty good. But if he's one of your starters, then you're probably not nearly as good as you think you should be. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's where I am on him as well. And you know, he's had his chance, Paul. He's had a lot of chances. And to me, it's time, if there's other guys that are able to get at-bats in there, I think you want to see more consistency than you've seen out of that position in this Pirates lineup. Let's also get into Andrew McCutchen. I'm certainly not going to be a guy who writes him off after 2 weeks and says, man, should they not have done this deal? I think it's way too soon to be having that conversation about him. He's still getting on base at a decent clip, even though he's not really hitting. That's a skill he's kind of gone into the God tier with here late in his career. But are we living, you know, in the situation now where we're seeing how limiting it is to have him on the team if he's not playing well? Because there are so many guys that you might want to give those at-bats to if Andrew McCutchen is not being Andrew McCutchen from start to finish?
I mean, that's the dilemma when you have a superstar, right? A guy that's an aging superstar who obviously has been one of the best players that they've had over the last 20 or 30 years, face of the franchise. All that good stuff. What do we say? Fan favorite. All of it. I get it. But, Adam, you get in a situation where you can't play him. We're not there yet. He still draws walks. He still gets on base a little bit. He's still a guy who looks like he might have a little bit of bat speed. But at some point, You know, the biggest problem that they have is that they can get away with playing McCutchen right now because I don't know who else is out there in their organization that's jumping out off the page. You know, as similar to the discussion we just had about Sawinski and Triola, you got to play them. Really? I mean, I just and that might tell you a whole lot more about their organization and really how far away they actually are from where they claim to be, is that they can't find a way to get him out of the lineup. So to me, I get it. He's a fan favorite. He's one of the guys that, you know, you signed. You're hoping for him to be that veteran, you know, presence and all that stuff. That's good. But the reality of the situation is this. If you don't take a look at the fact that he is probably hurting you more than he's helping you, and be honest about it, and then adjust his playing time appropriately, you're not, once again, giving yourself the best chance to win. Which, by the way, I was speaking of Nick Gonzalez, I was looking at his slash line, and it's pretty good in Indianapolis. So we might see him at some point.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting to see, Paul. I mean, and you know, they invested a number one pick in him too, Paul. Like, you know, these are guys that should be turning out. And to your point, Paul, it's like, is Jared Triola possibly going to be fine? Can he be kind of a Jordy Mercer type? You know, where I don't think Jordy Mercer was on a ton of top prospects list, but he was a solid ball player for those teams, a solid infielder. You know, maybe Jared Triola can be that, but. You didn't draft Nick Gonzalez to get beat out by Jared Triola, and that's the facts. And there, you can go down the line on some of these first round picks, and they're just questionable. Paul, I also wanted to get you out of here on some Penguins talk. There's a lot of conversation about whether they can make the playoffs, Paul, whether they will, can, etc. How much do you actually want to see this team in the playoffs? Because I think for 90% of the season. And going back to last season, I just see a lot of guys who look like losers to me. And I'm not talking about Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. I think the core has generally played pretty well this season, have dragged a lot of these bums to this point in the season. But there's part of me – listen, they're there. I went on a rant when we did a Steelers podcast a few months ago that you never want to throw away a chance to get into the tournament and maybe make some magic happen. You don't want to take these situations for granted. Who knows when the Penguins will be here, you know, after the next couple of years when the core starts to age out for real. That said, man, I just kind of have a hard time envisioning this being a particularly joyful experience once the Penguins get there, if they do get into the playoffs, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important to note this. They completely already screwed the pooch when it comes to trying to tank, right? They've already done that. They're going to be a middling, you know, draft choice. And, you know, for the most part, they're not going to get, you know, the high impact superstar player. So to me, you know what? I want to see if it gives me another 4 or 5 games of watching Sidney Crosby play and Malkin and company, I'm okay with that. I'm of the belief they should have blown the thing up 3 years ago. They haven't. So since they haven't, to me, why not? Why not make the playoffs, even if you lose in the first round? You know, I find it hilarious that there's this new, like, way of thinking in this town, Adam, among the, you know, some of the usual suspects, that like every team that is at the top of the standings is fearing the Penguins getting in the playoffs. That's always the story in this town, isn't it? Everybody's afraid of the Steelers getting in the playoffs. Everybody's afraid of the Penguins getting in the playoffs. And look, I get it. They played well against Toronto the other night. They played reasonably well in the last. But let's not get confused here. First of all, let's start here. They don't have a single goalie on their team who's ever proven they can win in the playoffs. So let's start there, which is a big, big thing in the NHL. Secondly, for all the talk about 4 Hall of Famers, Carlson has been – is disappointment. Is that a fair word to describe Carlson, right?
Letang is Letang, and for all the good he does, he still does some of the same dumb things he did 15 years ago, right? Malkin has had this little renaissance, or whatever you want to call it, because his parents are in town or something. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think anyone fears the Penguins. I think if you're the Rangers, if you're the, you know, the Boston, if you're Carolina, you're probably not fearing any of these teams. What I will say is the five teams that are vying for the last two spots in the East, I could make a case the Penguins are the best of that group, but that group isn't very good.
Yeah, I don't really get the feeling that this is a Florida Panthers situation from a year ago, Paul, where they had injuries, they had to slip into the playoffs, but they get healthy and they're able to go on a run because they had won the President's Trophy the year before. These Penguins are not that. And for me, Paul, it's not about, you know, no, Evgeny Malkin is not, you know, 2009 Carolina Hurricanes like that player. Eastern Conference Final where he was just going to take over. You know, Chris Letang, you take the good with the bad. But to me, it's more about like Jeff Carter. I forget the stat I saw the other day of like how few goals they've scored in 5-on-5 situations with him on the ice. And just a bunch of guys who just don't really do much for me at all. Do you really want to see another 2 weeks of them? Yeah, I think on balance, probably, but it's just hard to believe in some of the other guys on this team. Paul, any final thoughts on the week before we wrap up here?
Well, just a couple of real quick thoughts. Number one, it's pretty interesting that the Connecticut Men were every bit as good as we thought they would be as they steamrolled through everybody. One of the most dominant teams we've seen in a long time. And then we had the shakeup that was heard around the world with John Calipari going to Arkansas. As of the taping of this, we don't know who's going to replace John Calipari. But college basketball, the wheels are turning right now. And, of course, the transfer portal's in high gear. So we've got all of that going on, along with the Penguins, who have four games left. The next time we talk, Adam, we will know if they're a playoff team or not.
Yes. So either we'll be doing a post-mortem of that team next week, or we'll be getting ready for a playoff series. So make sure you're subscribed to the channel. Make sure you pop a like on this video if you enjoyed it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm. And we will talk to you again next week.
All right, my man. Be good.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.